the tattoo artist inks a design along her arm. What are you going to get?
Jem shrugs.
I don't know. Something pretty. Flowers, maybe, since, you know, I do like flowers.
I nod.
We can't have tattoos in the leagues. Our arms are often exposed in the shows, and the unmarked skin is part of the uniform. Maybe I'll even be a gardener when I'm too old to perform. Jem muses as she taps her fingers absently against a glass case, checking out the costume jewelry underneath it.
Huh, you'd be the best ever and put everyone out of business.
Jem laughs.
True, so true. But my made flowers never last.
Doesn't matter. You'd be the flower magician, and everyone would come to your store to see you make roses and lilies.
Boring,
Jem says.
What's boring?
Those flowers. I like daisies. Those crazy Gerber daisies, you know? They're in every color. Purple, pink, blue, peach. Perfect for me, don't you think?
Jem says as she models a silvery ring with a gleaming aqua sunburst in the middle.
I'm not sure if she means the ring or the rainbow of daisies, but my answer's the same either way.
Yes, I say, as she roots around in her purse for cash. She finds some bills. She plunks them down on the counter and smiles at the clerk. The clerk hands Jem some change, and she thanks him.
You're cute. Do you want to go out sometime?
He smiles, blushes, and says yes. Then they exchange numbers.
I'm all grins and awe as we leave.
How did you do that?
I ask her with the same sort of admiration that non-elemental artists probably feel when they see us make fire or air. Still, asking a guy out seems about the equivalent.
She shoots me a look like I'm crazy.
You saw it. There was no voodoo, just a simple ask.
I'm impressed.
She shrugs happily and admires her ring.
This ring is awesome.
Have you talked to him before? Do you know him?
I press on, wanting to know how she can be so gutsy to ask out a guy she doesn't even know.
Kissing a boy on my last night in town is one thing, but laying it out there?
You're cute. Do you want to go out?
Is entirely another.
No, but now I can get to know him, she says, and the smile on her face is so natural, so normal, that I bet Jem never had to keep the kind of secrets I keep.
A few days later, my phone buzzes with a text from Elise.
Mindy invited Jana to the mall today. Jay said couldn't go, said she had to spend the day at swim practice. She'll come over later, though, for dinner.
My spine stiffens. I write back, pressing hard against the dial pad.
See if her hands are cold.
Really?
Yes.
After practice that evening, Elise replies.
Hands are warm. Said she was tired from swimming all day. She went home.
I call Jana at home. She doesn't answer. No one answers. I finally reach her the next day.
Are you okay?
Yeah, why wouldn't I be?
You didn't answer last night.
I fell asleep.
Is Dad working you too hard in the water?
No, I just...
But she's cut off by the sound of my father.
We need to go.
High tide is soon, she whispers to me. He wants me to become stronger by swimming against the tide.
Swim away from him. Swim across the ocean, I want to say.
Chapter 14. Looking Out. By the time the first show rolls around a few weeks later, the legend of the Fire Twin has been scratched from the lineup. I've been relegated to the chorus, where I back up the better elemental artists. We perform in Intrepid Arena, which was built several years ago in the middle of the greens of Central Park for the New York Yankees, but has become better known as the home for the Cœur de la Nature show, the name for our troupe. The Yankees still play here, but only in the mornings now,
and the ground crews have to slap up sliding walls over most of the seats, because the team only generates a fraction of the crowds that they did back when spectators used to watch big boys smash balls. A slice of the ground has been left exposed, a canvas of dirt and grass for the earth artists to paint on. On each side of our stage is a glittering black curtain that shimmers in the breeze, with silver, real silver, streaked into it to make the arena appear as some ethereal night. The stage itself is set like New York City, with backdrops of tall buildings, glowing street lamps, and luminous building stoops after a rain. There is no starlight in New York City. There is too much light pollution. But tonight, it's my task to make starlight. It's one of the hardest tricks I've had to master in the last year because it requires pinpoint precision and patience. Tonight I craft the tiniest little flickers, scatter them above me, and keep them stoked because my starlight becomes the backdrop for Mariska as she makes the ground in Central Park rumble, the earth under the audience shifting and tilting. After the show, I call Elise to tell her about my first performance in the ME Leagues. We chat as I walk back to the dorm, and a construction crew jackhammers a section of concrete on Broadway. "It's always like this here," I say, laughing over the noise. "Even at night. How's home?" "Boring without you." "Ha, I find that hard to believe. Kyle is probably thrilled to have you all to himself." "Yeah, but doing donuts in the parking lot was more fun with you." "I bet other things in the parking lot are more fun with him." She laughs. Then her laughter fizzles out. "So listen, I have something to tell you," she says. No good news has ever begun with those words. But I barely have time to brace myself because she continues. "I've been recruited too." "Are they sending you here too? Because that would be perfect." I let myself feel hope for a second. "No." "Where then?" "The Lookouts want me." "The Lookouts? But what about college?" "My dad wants me to postpone it for a year. My dad thinks it's good experience. A real honor, he says. Like this honest, noble thing you can do. He said it'll look great on my resume." "But do you want to?" "I'm not talented in the way you are, Aria. But I can use these talents in other ways. To help with the storms. To lessen the impact," she explains. But she barely has to because the Lookouts are the perfect fit for Elise. They're the altruistic elemental artists. They don't use their gifts for fame and glory. They use them to make the world safer. They give, like Elise does. "Right. Of course, you'll be amazing." But there's a heaviness in the phone lines, a cracking pause, and I have a feeling everything in my life is about to rattle out of order, two sides of a fault line slipping far away. "The thing is, Ar," she continues, "they're sending me to sea next week, with the Coast Guard. I'll be working on a boat for the next few months. I'll be on storm duty in the Atlantic." "A boat?" I repeat, as if it doesn't compute, because it doesn't. I'm finally settling in. I can finally see freedom. And so this just can't be happening. "Yeah, we train out at sea, in the middle of the ocean. We're stationed there too, so we can fight the hurricanes." "A boat," I say, the words like tar in my mouth. "I'm so sorry, Aria. I feel terrible. But we can still try to meet up in August. I'll see if I can get leave, okay?" I want nothing more than for her to tell me she's pranking me. But that isn't her style. The Lookouts is her style. I just wish I didn't feel as if the sidewalk is crumbling under me. "No, it's okay," I manage to say, even though my carefully planned life is slipping away. "Don't worry about me." "But what are we going to do?" "I'll figure something out," I say through tight lips, my insides hollow. "You will?" "Sure. There are always other ways." "That's what the lady said. You can be born with fire, You can steal it, or you can bargain for it. With a grantor. I weigh the odds. On the one hand, stealing fire can bring life punishments. But I've been stealing fire since I was 13, and I haven't been caught. All I have to do is maintain my track record. After I end the call with Elise, I dial my brother, and we make small talk for a minute or two. Then I slide into the important stuff. How's Jana?
She kicked my sorry butt in Monopoly tonight, Xavi says with an appreciative tone in his voice.
That's because I had Boardwalk, Jana shouts in the background.
You're really playing Monopoly?
Yeah, I told you I'd look out for her. She spent the day at the pool with Dad, and now she's with me.
I cringe inside, picturing her daily water workouts with Dad. But at least for tonight she is safe. So, I have to ask you a question, I say, and I bet he can smell the lie coming. But I also doubt he'll care.
Hit me.
The leagues are crazy intense about grantor use, and say they're doing some new testing this year. Everyone here is kind of freaking out. And some say you can test for grantors, and some say you can't, and no one knows. You know some guys who use them, right? Is there a way to test?
You using a grantor are?
Xavi asks me, but he doesn't sound like he's judging. More like he's impressed.
No,
I say, forcing a laugh. I'm just curious.
Here's what I know. All the guys who were caught caught because of what they wished for and what they did. But there's no way to test for grantor use. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Good. Because I have no more choices. When I run out of fire in a month or so, they'll know I stole my fire in the first place. I've come to the end of a rope knotted by all the untenable choices I've already been forced to make. The choice now is clear. Somewhere in this city of millions, there's got to be a grantor who'll bargain with me. Chapter 15. Thoughts and Actions.
They're found in tunnels. They're found behind doors.
Xavier's earlier words about grantors clang around in my head a few nights later, as I walk along the edge of the park after our performance. There's an apartment building across the street with double brass doors and a doorman. Maybe the doorman is holding the door open for a grantor.
Maybe that's why Jem said grantors are virtually impossible to find. There are tunnels everywhere, doors everywhere. There could be grantors everywhere.
But that doesn't matter. I have to find one. If I have to open every door in New York City, I will. I've been hunting for the last few days, inspecting every last one. But I've found no door marked G, no tunnel that leads to the lair of a wish giver. I trek across town, continuing my hunt. An hour later, I'm on the east side, and I walk past a subway stop. Maybe there's a grantor down in the tracks. I'd claw my way through the dirt and grime to uncover a grantor. I'd race in front of a train to track one down. After I hunt through the subway station, I walk south toward the Chrysler building, wishing I'd never stolen fire in the first place. If I'd been tougher and stronger, I wouldn't be wandering through Manhattan now in a frenzied state of wanting. I wish I'd never become a fire girl, because now I can't be anything but a fire girl. I need too much, more than I needed back then. Now I am desperate, consumed by a desperate wish for a grantor. My boots are heavy against the sidewalk grate. Where do these things even lead to? What's under these stupid grates that women are afraid of getting their heels caught in? I flash back on the boy descending below the grate when I first saw him. But all I can picture is a cesspool of grime and dirt, of cigarettes squashed and stubbed out, of flimsy white plastic bags from the drugstore floating in dankness, of a wet, dirty muck oozing underground. Then I picture a door in the grate, and suddenly I stop. Because it's not my imagination. There is a door. The grate has become a door, and I see a pair of hands pushing from underneath the grate, lifting the iron-hatched bars above the sidewalk. Then a loud clanging thunk as the grate hits the concrete. There's a boy stepping out of the sidewalk vault, a boy with strong cheekbones and dark hair, wearing pressed pants and a white button-down shirt that looks freshly laundered, and black shiny shoes. He hoists himself up onto the sidewalk, and I look around, out of instinct, to see if anyone else notices. The crowds have thinned, and the people far on the other side of the street don't seem to care. It's just me and the Chrysler Building, and this boy. The beautiful boy. Chapter 16. Bound. Taj readjusts the grate, positioning it back over the vault so the sidewalk is safe for others. He wipes one hand against the other.
Do you need help? I ask, each word coming out as if I've never said them before, because I'm not sure what to say or do.
No, I'm totally fine. But I have a feeling you might need help, Arya.
He gestures to the long stretch of sidewalk in front of us, the ribbon of concrete that lies between us and the tip of Manhattan Island.
Ah, but isn't it freeing to be able to go for an evening stroll?
There's envy in his words. I'm not sure I should go for a walk with him, seeing as he's emerged, though unscathed, from a grate. But in some weird way, I feel as if I know him, even though we only talked that one time in the hall. Besides, he's not the picture of a boy who'd be scrapping around underground. He's the picture of the boys in fashion magazines, the ones with sculpted bones, smooth skin, and smoldering eyes, who wear clothes as if the clothes should be lucky to be so close to their flesh. Boys who have that enigmatic sense of where they're from. They don't tell. They're just not from here.
Sure.
We walk, and he lifts his face to the night sky as if he's soaking in the stars. He takes a deep breath, and when we reach the light at 42nd Street, we both stop, waiting for our signal to cross. He shifts his head from side to side like he's working out the kinks in his neck.
Ah, no one ever tells you that all that time in between gives you one sore neck. It's been a while.
Been a while?
Yes. It's been a while since I've been summoned. Well, a few weeks to be precise. You were looking for a grantor, weren't you?
He can read my mind.
It's okay. You can say yes. I've never been wrong before. It's just kind of one of those things. That's how it works with us. You really want us, truly need us, we appear.
You're a grantor? Mariska was using a grantor? My jaw hangs open. Mariska is so straight-laced, so by the book. She's constantly harping on about the need to work harder. I can't believe she'd use a grantor.
Taj shakes his head. I don't grant and tell.
Like doctor-patient privilege? He shrugs evasively, but says nothing. You weren't her boyfriend? You were hanging around because she was using you?
I love how you just cut straight to the chase. But I'm afraid there's nothing I can say about the past. So let's focus on now.
Okay, I say unevenly, because I don't even know how to process all this information flying at me. The beautiful boy in her pictures is a grantor. But then, the brilliant truth lands in my lap, bright and shiny.
Mariska was using a grantor, and she's still in the leagues.
Ergo, both Jem and Xavi are right.
You can't test for grantor use.
My luck is changing.
So you just appear. Like that? I snap my fingers. The light changes, and we cross.
Did you think we were found in bottles or something?
He asks, as if I'm a little kid who believes in fairy tales. I wasn't sure, I answer quietly.
Because that whole genie-in-a-bottle thing is a total myth. I don't know where that came from.
I'm pretty sure it came from 1001 Arabian Nights.
Ah, but perhaps all those stories are myths, too. The genie and the merchant, the genie and the fisherman, Aladdin and his wonderful lamp. Perhaps the genie in those stories are all fables, too, he says, and we're circling each other's words.
Suddenly, I'm not so sure it's a bright idea to be jousting with a grantor, especially one who seems so ready to call me out on the slightest inaccuracy. After all, I don't really know 1001 Arabian Nights that well.
Now you see them? Now you don't.
He snaps his fingers and is gone. Like that. Nothing left behind. Here 1 second, gone the next. My heart speeds wildly, bangs its tiny fists in my chest. I didn't want him to go, and I have this impulse to hunt for him like a crazed woman who has lost a diamond ring, because I need him. I need him. And of course, that's why he appeared. He appeared because my wish for him was so deep, so potent, so full of raw desire. That's all it took for him to appear. Monstrous need. They're virtually impossible to find, unless you absolutely must have one. Maybe I can return him to me with that same canyon of need. I close my eyes and make a wish he'll show up again. When I open my eyes, I'm still alone on this stretch of Lexington Avenue, and he's neither behind me nor in front of me, neither perched in a doorway nor hiding around the corner. Then I spot him. He's across the street, leaning against the streetlight on the corner. He waves at me, a gotcha sort of wave. I cross Lexington.
So you don't live in a lamp, and you can just come and go as you please?
He narrows his eyes and purses his lips. They look soft.
I wouldn't say I can come and go as I please. But the lamp thing...
He waves a hand to dismiss the idea.
Ancient history. Would it make you feel better if I told you that not everyone who wants a grantor can have one? That you've got to be desperate enough to find one?
Desperate. That sounds about right. Even so, something doesn't compute. But I didn't find you. I thought grantors had to be found, I say. Because even though he's telling me how his kind work, I somehow feel the need to point out, with my extraordinarily limited and third-hand knowledge of grantors, that he might be wrong. He rolls his eyes, then speaks slowly, as if he doesn't expect me to get it.
We are found. We are found in the wanting and blah, blah, blah.
I look him over. This tall, dark, and handsome boy walking next to me. This magazine model boy, who was found below a grate. This is crazy. This is a freaky dream I should wake myself from. But I've had lightning pierce my heart. I've made fire from my hands. I've touched an ice-cold gator. I've been stripped free of the capacity for shock. That doesn't mean I'm not doubtful. So let's say you're not just an apparition and that everyone can see you. Does that mean nobody cares that you just disappeared and reappeared across the street?
Welcome to New York City, where no one pays attention to anyone else, especially those living in the sidewalk tunnels.
Taj tips his forehead west. We begin walking across town. Where are we going?
Much as I simply adore the foundations of New York City's finest architecture, I find I'm rather partial to the open spaces. I get a bit tired of being underground all the time.
Underground and tunnels. Xavi wasn't wrong with the big picture. So we're going where then? I ask again.
How does Bryant Park sound to you?
And so the girl Prometheus and the grantor boy walk a few blocks to Bryant Park in the middle of Manhattan. There's an ice cream stand in the park.
Do you like ice cream?
He asks.
because I'm really hungry and I could definitely go for one. Of course I like ice cream. What flavor?
Cherry. Taj asks for a cherry cone for me, and the man behind the stand hands one to me. Then Taj requests a coconut chocolate popsicle with those crunchy bits on the outside. He takes a bite.
That is one fine ice cream cone. Bite? They're calorie-free, you know, he says.
Really? He shrugs.
No, but you could wish for that.
That seems like a waste of a wish.
I've yet to meet a wish that isn't a waste, he says.
His pure brown eyes are shadowed right now, hidden behind things unsaid. What do you mean?
Nothing, he says dismissively. Don't wish for calorie-free ice cream. Don't wish for anything yet. Just have a bite.
He's trying to sound cool, but I can hear the tiniest flick of need. If I eat this, does it count as some weird wish in a way? Like the you get three wishes thing and I used one of my wishes without realizing it? Did I just give up a wish?
He scoffs. Three wishes? You wish. It's one wish. One wish at a very high price. Like your life, your soul, your heart, your livelihood, your family. Besides, I'm not some kind of jackass granter who could be tricked into giving up three wishes.
What's a jackass granter?
Do you have a boyfriend?
Where did that question come from?
I'm giving you an example of a jackass granter. Play along with me, Arya. Do you have a boyfriend?
I think of Shortstop, whose name I don't know, and the long, bruising kiss we shared my last night in Wonder. No. Taj raises an eyebrow.
Good. Now let's say, just for the sake of argument, that you did. And let's say he wasn't quite as handsome as you wished.
I laugh again. Then why would he be my boyfriend?
Ah, see? You only go for the hot ones, don't you? What about his heart? Don't you care about his heart?
We're talking about a hypothetical boyfriend I don't have who isn't terribly hot, and you want to know why I don't care about his heart? I toss back, and I finally feel as if I landed a jab. But why does he feel like an opponent? Shouldn't we be on the same side? My side. He's moving, though, swimming like a shark. Never stopping.
So you meet a jackass granter, and you wish for your boyfriend to be totally smoking hot. Then a jackass granter
would make him literally on fire, I supply. Taj nods.
And with jackass granters, the payment is a tad different, because the wish itself is often the payment.
Ironic, though, that you chose smoking hot. Because, you know, I could make him smoking on my own. I waggle my hands.
Ah, you're a fire girl, as I suspected.
Wait, you don't know everything about me already?
I'm not a mind reader, just a good listener.
He taps the side of his head. So you're not a jackass granter, then? What kind are you? What other kind of granters are there?
Jackass Benevolent Ghoul Infernal Sea,
he says so quickly with barely any space between the words.
And then there's just one more kind. Want to guess what I am?
Sure, I'm good in competitions. For starters, I'm pretty sure benevolent doesn't apply to you.
Oh, you don't think I'm nice?
I wouldn't say so, but niceness isn't the trait I lead with either, so I don't see that as a problem. Somehow I doubt you're infernal, because that would imply you're the devil.
Let's hope I'm not infernal. I'd look awful with horns, don't you think?
Are you a ghoul?
No, they're creepy. I'm not creepy. Do I remotely seem creepy?
I mean, look at this face, he says, and flashes me a huge faux smile. Sea Granter seems doubtful since we're on land. So you're obviously the other kind. The one more kind. What kind is that?
I would be the simplest, the most boring, the standard, average, ordinary granter who grants the greatest of wishes for the greatest of prices. No more, no less. Otherwise known as a mastered granter. He punctuates those words, and it's clear that his lot is defined solely by the wisher. You don't have free will?
No, no free will whatsoever. So I hope, Arya, you'll forgive me for asking you not to wish just yet. It's the only way I can have a taste of free will at all.
What do you mean?
I guess I'd just like to play master and granter for a few days. Would you oblige me? Would you mind terribly if you waited to wish just a few nights?
The realization hits me hard. He must have been hanging out with Mariska as long as he could, simply so he could be free for a bit. Waiting hardly seems like much to ask, especially when he is so trapped, and when I don't know yet how to pay for my wish. Maybe with myself somehow? Some kind of trade? And I need to be smart and strategic, because this wish is how I will save my family. Still, I don't trust easily. Yes. But tell me, are you a good granter or a bad granter? He pauses, then curls his lips into a tantalizing smile.
That depends entirely on the wisher, he says.
Speaking of, I'm required to let you know that there are three preliminary conditions and exceptions to wishing. Because love is a powerful force in its own right, and often transcends the rules of wishing, you need to know that I can't make someone fall in love with you. I can't bring someone back from the dead. And I can't grant you more wishes.
Seems pretty standard.
Oh, yes, yes, standard. We're so standard, aren't we?
And you're an expert now in the rules of wishing and the granting of wishing?
No,
I say in a tough voice, giving it right back to him. It's just common sense. Some things are. He doesn't have an answer for that, so I enjoy a small twinge of victory before I ask another question.
And what if I don't wish at all? What if I decide in a few days to just not wish?
Then you don't.
And you just go away?
He places a hand on his chest.
Would that make you sad, if I went away?
I feel unmoored again. I can't tell if he is teasing me or asking seriously. I stick to the logistics.
Is that what would happen if I didn't wish in a few days?
You'd just go away? If you release me, O Master, then I'd be gone.
So you're really saying that if I don't make my one wish now, tonight, that I can still make it tomorrow, or the next night, or the next?
Absolutely. 100%. You have time. As long as you need a wish, I will be your granter, and I will be at your service, he says in a serious tone.
He takes a small, burnished bronze genie's lamp from his pocket. It's miniature and fits in his palm.
Think of this like a phone. You rub it, and I'll get the message in a lamp I keep with me. Here, try it.
I laugh. You just said granters don't live in lamps. He laughs, too.
I know. It's sort of an inside joke. And now, you're on the inside.
He hands me the small lamp, and then disappears again. I don't waste any time. I rub the lamp once. He reappears.
See? You're my master.
I hate the sound of being his master. Is there any other way to find you? Like, maybe we could just pick a time and a place?
That would work too,
he says with a small laugh. Tomorrow night then, I suggest, and we settle on the details. Tosh, I don't wish to release you for now.
Thank you, Master.
You don't have to call me Master.
What if I wish to?
He raises an eyebrow. Now he's teasing. Then I wouldn't wish. I say, crossing my arms. I can play at his game. His lips quirk up in satisfaction. I lean forward, take a bite of the coconut chocolate concoction, savoring the taste on my tongue.
Taj leans toward me, and without asking, he takes a bite from my cone. He raises his eyebrows appreciatively.
"It's good ice cream," he says.
"Yes, it's very good ice cream."
"So will you tell me if you are a good wisher or a bad wisher?"
I don't answer because, really, isn't it obvious? All wishers are bad. Instead, I suggest we walk around the edge of the park. He says yes, but I suspect he is not capable of saying no to his new master. Chapter 17, Shooting Star. I run into Jem in the dorm showers. She's dressed in shorts and a black t-shirt with a red sequined heart on it. She's brushing her teeth at the sinks. She tips her forehead at me, then takes her toothbrush out of her mouth.
"Grantor testing started today,"
she says with a mouthful of toothpaste. I feel as if the towel wrapped around me is sheer, as if Jem can see through me to know that I haven't wished, but that I want to. I half want to tell her. I hate being so alone. "You better grab a coffee after you shower," she adds, giving me some sort of tip I don't quite get. "Coffee? Why?" I hang the towel on a hook, step into the shower, and pull the curtain closed. "Is coffee necessary to make it through testing?"
"Hell yeah," Jem says. "They did mine a little while ago. It's the dullest thing you'll ever experience."
"Really?"
"Yep."
"What's it like?" Jem explains, and I laugh.
"Who would have thought?" I say. "No wonder I'll need caffeine to make it through testing. I'll need it to stay awake."
I finish my shower, head to my room, and pull on some clothes. Raina comes knocking a few minutes later, her bored and careless eyes barely giving me a once-over.
"Name?"
Raina holds a clipboard and a pencil, checking off boxes as she goes. "Aria Avina Kalandros."
"Date of birth?"
I give her the date.
"Place of birth?"
"Wonder, Florida."
"When did you come into your powers?"
"Around 13, like everyone else."
"Your parents were?"
"Water and fire."
"You're registered?"
"Yes, of course."
"I mean, you're registered here."
Raina stabs the paper on her clipboard.
"You're being registered as clean."
"Excuse me?" Raina stares at me, her eyes saying, "Can you really be this doltish?" Then she speaks ever so slowly.
"You are registered as clean of Granters."
"I am?" That was all name, rank, and serial number. If the leagues were truly trying to root out Granter use, you'd figure they'd stage a more sophisticated show. But maybe they figure a simple show is enough to keep us in line. That if they can't truly test, the appearance of a quick procedure is all we need to stay straight. I head to practice, checking my phone on the walk from the dorm to Chelsea Piers. There's an email from Elise. "Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. It's a pirate's life for me out here in the South Pacific." Just kidding. I'm not in the South Pacific. I'm somewhere in the great God knows where of the Atlantic Ocean. This sucker is massive. You ever seen it? Wink. Well, don't go Google it because it'll make your stomach spin. It's so freaking big. Like, I can't even see both ends of the ocean at the same time big. Anyway, I'm actually in the Caribbean, and the ship's internet connection is so slow, it's taken me 14 hours and 22 minutes to write this email. I kid you not. But I'm learning a lot and working hard, and the lookouts are amazing. The top ones have already held back what would have been Hurricane Danya had it gotten bigger. Yep, thanks to my new co-workers, Danya was just a mere pup of a tropical storm down here. Just a little piddling of rainwater. Well, enough from me. Are you okay? Are you managing? What are you going to do? I'd call you, but all we have are satellite phones, and they're crazy expensive to use. I keep thinking of ways to come see you. I'm doing everything I can to angle for some sort of leave for a day or two. I promise. I'll keep working it. I don't know if I can get to New York, but I might be able to pull off Florida sometime in August. XOXOX, Elise. I write back as I walk into Chelsea Piers. I think I've got it all figured out. Love you much. Your favorite Frankenstein's monster. I am giddy as I board the subway at Times Square. I am positively bouncing as the train scoots south a few stops. I am ecstatic as I disembark at 23rd Street and head to the nearby Flatiron Building, where Taj and I decided to meet. I have the miniature lamp in my pocket just in case. The angular building comes to a point on a triangular block at 5th Avenue and Broadway, an anchor for the neighborhood, this oddly molded bit of architecture. The Flatiron Building also happens to be surrounded by sidewalk grates, by vaults and pits under them, labyrinthine tunnels that lie beneath the city and once housed coal, Taj said. I have never felt so free before. Well, not since the first time Elise stabbed me in the chest with lightning. And even then, I'm not sure it was freedom I felt so much as relief. As I wait for the light to change, I wonder if the two feelings are that different. Freedom and relief. Maybe they're one and the same. I don't have my freedom yet, but when I get it, I'll no longer have to set my heart to flames. That's the real freedom. I won't be living on borrowed time. I'll be whole again. Maybe that's why I'm beaming when I cross the street. Like clockwork, Taj appears, pushing up the top of the grate and poking out his head. He holds up the grate with one hand. The iron grate must be insanely heavy. I can't see all of him, but he looks sharp again, sleek again, this time in a navy blue checked button-down, the cuffs rolled up twice. He motions with his free hand for me to come down. He must be joking. I reach the grate and kneel. Are you going to come out? People are going to start to notice the guy under the grate.
I thought maybe you could come to my place tonight, he says playfully.
I'm not that kind of a girl.
Come on down. What are you afraid of?
Crawling underground beneath New York City. I think that's sort of a normal fear.
Aria. Do you want a wish to not be afraid?
I hold back a sigh. He's a bit vexing. No.
Then just come down for a minute. I have candy,
he says, as if he's luring a child.
Or did your mom tell you not to take candy from strangers?
I don't eat candy. I have to watch what I eat in the leagues.
You ate ice cream.
I know, but that was an exception.
So make another exception. Come on. How many times are you going to see where a Granter lives in New York City? I promise you won't get hurt. And I'll hold your hand so you won't be afraid.
I have no choice but to say yes. I need him more than he needs me. Ironic, given that he's a mastered Granter, and I'm the one who feels toyed with like a puppet. But maybe this sort of cat-and-mouse play is the only way he can experience free will. Free will. Don't we all want that? Fine, but then we're coming back up.
I promise,
he says, and pushes the grate even higher. He offers me his hand. I take it, and his skin is warm and soft. I hold on tight as I lower myself into his world, dark and dingy, under the streets of New York. My heart rate spikes because there's very little natural light in here, only slivers through the grate. All my instincts start building inside me, like heat rising to the surface, and I want to set this place on fire, to illuminate it so I can see. I'm about to open my palms and ignite when Taj grips my hand tighter. The impulse is snuffed out by the pressure of his skin against mine as he leads me through a twisty and pitch-black maze. Dust fills my lungs, and I faintly smell coal. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I know I should be freaked out to be skulking underground with a virtual stranger. But another part of me likes how warm his hand is. It's such a simple pleasure to hold someone's hand, a pleasure I so rarely enjoy, to have someone take my hand and not cringe at my scars. He didn't the first time he met me. He's not freaking out now. A train roars by on the other side of this tunnel's wall, so close I could touch it if there were no wall. My teeth rattle, my bones shake. Then the train passes. We curve around another claustrophobic corner, and I vaguely remember learning in history class about the catacombs of Paris and Rome, and I'm picturing crumbling skulls and ossified bones greeting me around the next bend. Soon, we near the end of the cramped, cave-like path. Taj reaches forward in the darkness, as if he is opening a door. Light spills in, and the door takes shape, high and arched and heavy as it opens into a gorgeous and quiet and beautiful space. A library, under the sidewalks of New York. Chapter 18. The Way It Is. The wood floors are dark. Maybe oak. But I don't know types of wood, or types of furniture, or which century this or that armoire or crystal goblet or chandelier is from. All I know is this looks like the New York Public Library, the famous one. Shelves upon shelves of books from floor to ceiling fill one long wall, so long I can barely see where it extends. There's even a rolling ladder to reach the books on the highest shelves. A massive desk squats nearby on an intricately woven rug that looks like it probably costs more than my entire dilapidated home in Wonder. On the desk is a lamp with a pull-down chain to turn on the bulb. A book is open on the desk. A dark blue couch is pressed against the wall opposite the bookshelves, and a coffee table rests in front of the couch. But there's nothing on the coffee table. No newspapers, no mugs, no evidence of living. The only thing on the coffee table is a genie's lamp. Burnished copper, with etched markings in a foreign alphabet. I step closer and point to it. I thought you didn't live in a lamp.
I don't live in a lamp.
Why do you have this, then? Is this like your phone that you were talking about? He shakes his head.
Not this one.
Then what is this one?
You know the Queen of England?
Not personally.
Right. Well, neither do I. Know her personally, that is. Though I know many other heads of state, but that's a conversation for another time. Point being, she's a figurehead.
He gestures carelessly to the lamp.
And that's a figurehead.
Like an anachronism, I say, and he taps his index finger to his nose. Can I look around?
Of course. That's why I wanted you to come here,
he says, and smiles at me. It's not the faux full-face grin he gave me last night. It's a sweet one, a cute one, like a boy gives a girl when he wants to play her the song he wrote or give her the comic he drew. It's almost enough to make me feel as if I'm special, and I'm being shown something few see. But then I remind myself that this is his job. Good-looking or not, he probably wants all wishers to feel welcome. I run my hands along the spines of the books. Some are cloth-bound, some leather, some just standard hardbacks. Did Mariska come here? He laughs. Did she? I ask again.
I never invited her.
Why did you invite me? He pauses as if considering his words.
You are more interesting.
I laugh, raise an eyebrow. Well, thanks. I do what I can. I circle around to his desk. What were you reading?
The Great Gatsby. Started it last night after I met you. Haven't read a thing in a few weeks.
Since The Hitchhiker's Guide? He nods and flashes a smile that's erased as quickly as it arrived.
You remembered?
Yes. Did I inspire you to read?
Something like that.
Taj says in a quiet voice that catches my attention. I look up from the desk, and his brown eyes are sad. The barbs of last night are fading, the pointed comments becoming less sharp. That's why you asked me not to wish, right? To hold off for a few days? He doesn't answer, just nods.
So you could read?
Yes.
You can't read unless you're bound to me or something?
He sighs. I can't do anything unless we're bound. And I like reading, okay? I hold up my hands.
I think that's great. It's like a passion of yours.
You could say that.
Are all Granters like that? I mean, I just think of all those stories of Granters. Tales within tales, and stories being able to set you free from debts and stuff. He shakes his head.
Don't get hung up on the old stories. Just because Scheherazade freed herself night after night with stories doesn't mean...
Doesn't mean what?
Doesn't mean anything,
he says heavily, but I doubt that's what he meant to say. I shift away from my questions that seem to pierce him. Well, I'm impressed that you're reading such a fancy book for fun. We were assigned the Great Gatsby in English class last year. I just looked up the Spark Notes online, I admit.
Really? It's so beautiful. You should read it.
You've read it before?
No, I don't reread books. I finished it this morning.
Fast reader.
Yes, you never know when you'll lose your place, he says.
Isn't that what bookmarks are for? He doesn't respond. I glance down at the page. The book is open to a line about the green light at the end of the dock. Hey, I remember that green light from the Spark Notes. It's all about hope, right? Taj grins and raises an eyebrow. He seems to have rustled himself out of that temporary mournful state and is now back to teasing again.
Yes, hope. There you go. No need to read it at all.
But seriously, I press, isn't the green light supposed to represent hopes and dreams, the thing we're all striving for?
I think that's fair to say. That's why I like it.
Because you're striving for something?
We all have a green light at the end of the dock, don't we?
I suppose.
You must, Arya. That's why we're talking. Sooner or later, you're going to tell me. You're going to ask for your green light at the end of the dock, aren't you?
I feel selfish when he says that. Like I shouldn't be asking, shouldn't be wanting, when his very existence in my life is predicated on the possibility of what I might wish. But that's why I'm here. Because of my need. Because it is so powerful. My need to stay in the leagues. To find my way through. To save my family. That is my duty. Janna, my mom, and even Xavier. They are the reason I'm talking to Taj. I guess, I admit. Though I'm enjoying hanging out with him right now. More than I thought I would. Do you want me to wish now or something? He shakes his head.
No. I mean, not unless you want to. But if you wanted to, I'd have to lay out the conditions. Standard operating proviso, you know. The rules, the regulations, the fine print, the loopholes and all that jazz.
He talks in a pseudo-lawyerly voice. I manage a small smile. I suppose I don't have to wish the second, I say. Because Taj seems as if he could really use a night away from wishing, from his job, from being mastered. Maybe we could... I'm not sure how to finish the sentence, but Taj's eyes light up.
Go above ground?
Well, your library is nice, but I kind of like light and air.
As do I.
Why did you want to show me where you live, then?
I don't know that I'd say I live here.
And he's back to his wiggly wordplay. Where do you live, then?
When I live here.
His words are chilly. When you live?
Ah, you see. We do have lamps, so to speak. Only, unlike the genies of old, we don't live in lamps in between wishers. In between wishers, we cease to live.
I close my eyes for a moment,
steady myself by placing a hand against his desk. I open my eyes, but I still feel like I'm swaying, like the room is uneven and hazy.
Do you mean you die after you grant a wish?
Not an official death. But we cease to exist when we're not dealing with wishers. It's just nothingness until we're needed, and it's only through a wisher giving us permission to stay that we get to hang around. Like I said, that's why I finished the book last night. You never know when you're no longer going to be needed. Your time can end just like that.
He snaps his fingers. That must be what happened with Mariska when he left. When he said he needed to finish The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in 10 minutes. That's terrible, I say, and my heart, my scarred and bruised heart, feels leaden. It's sad knowing he only comes alive to nod his head and say, "Yes, Master, you're a prince, you're rich, you're good-looking, here's a mansion for you." Stupid people. Stupid wishers. Stupid me. Do you still want me to wait a day or so to wish? That seems only fair. I can last another day. So you can be free for a while? He smiles.
Only if you want to.
I feel bad for you, that you just go away. He reaches for my hand.
Don't, Arya. It doesn't hurt. I'm barely even aware of it. It's not like sleeping or dreaming. It's just the way it is.
I clasp my fingers around his, keenly aware that we're holding hands for the second time tonight, and it feels natural and necessary. Sure, but sometimes the way it is sucks. Let's get out of this figurative or figurehead or whatever it is lamp of a living room, Taj. Let's get out of here and see New York. Wait, you've probably seen New York many times. How old are you? How long have you been a granter? How many wishers have you had?
18. Since I was almost 16. And plenty. To answer your questions. And the other one about New York? I like New York. So let's go.
We leave, and he leads me through the cavernous underground all the way to a grate. Only it's not the one we came down in. It's in an alley behind a theater on Broadway. As I climb up and out, we're standing under a marquee, lit up in bright shining lights, blaring the name of a show. Chapter 19. An Organ of Fire. Do they all connect? The underground tunnels?
Not when you're in them by yourself. When you're with me, yes.
I laugh, not because this is comical, but because it's incredible. So this is part of your magic?
I wouldn't call it magic, per se. It's more like knowing the shortcut. When you're with me, you can always take the shortcut underground. Then again, granters in general are kind of shortcuts, aren't they?
There he goes again, making some sort of philosophical observation about the role of wish-givers. He's right. Their purpose is to circumvent.
But it's kind of like a wish, too, he continues. When we travel through the tunnels, they go the way we want them to, the way we wish. So it's fitting. Do you like theater?
He gestures to the marquee.
Never been. Do you want to see a show right now?
Are you going to do that appear-disappear thing to get us in the theater? He scoffs at me.
I can, to get myself in. There's just one little problem. I can't take you with me that way. However, there's a thing known as second-acting a show. Ever done it?
No, seeing as I just said I've never even seen a show. We're surrounded by crowds milling about, by theatergoers making phone calls or puffing on cigarettes during intermission. A bell sounds from inside the theater, and the lights in the lobby flash.
2-minute bell,
he says, and places a hand on my back, guiding me inside the theater lobby, then past the refreshment stand, then into the auditorium itself. He stands near the back, scanning the seats. The house isn't full. Several back rows are mostly empty. When the lights dim and the curtain rises, he tips his forehead to a nearby aisle, and we snag a pair of seats. He grins. He had walked in like he owned the place.
Whoever said there was no such thing as a free show?
Enjoy the show, Arya. We've missed the first act, but I don't care because this second act is gorgeous. There's a boat tossed at sea, and crewmen singing about the dangerous waters that heave back and forth. Then a scene on a dock as a beautiful blonde woman sings to the moon, a sad plaintive song. Soon, curvy girls with long legs and tap shoes dance around a sea captain as he repairs the ship while crooning a love song. Then the blonde runs out to the stage, and when he sees her, he melts.